Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the second ever Megasode of Cinematic Universe, the podcast that's all about comic book movies, which you can find at cinematicmultiverse.com. I'm your host, Joe Cunningham, and I'll be bringing you a truncated version of the show to help bridge the gap between our Batman Mask of the Phantasm and Lego Batman, and then Logan episodes. I'll be giving you my reactions to the comics that Seven James recommended on the last two podcasts. So we've got Batman RIP, formerly known as the Justice League, Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, I'm forgetting them all already, and also Batman Year 2. But before any of that, let's take a look at some of the comic book, movie, and TV news that has broken over the past couple of weeks. And we'll start off with X-Men because there is a bunch of X-Men news out there at the moment, and we'll start off with the main X-Men title. It's increasingly looking like X-Men Supernova will be the next X-Men movie. Sophie Turner at the BAFTAs confirmed to Hey You Guys that she was filming the movie later this year. Nicholas Holt has said he thinks he's going to be involved, and all of the rumours are pointing towards this being a more direct adaptation of the Dark Phoenix saga. That's according to a plot synopsis that is out there that may or may not be official, but that's where all the signs are pointing. Simon Kinberg has been talking about the Dark Phoenix saga for a while. All of this kind of seems like it can be traced back to him. And it now looks like he is potentially going to direct the film as well. So anyone hoping for a new direction for the main X-Men movies, it looks like we're going to get a lot of the cast back from X-Men, Days of Future Past, First Class, and whatever that horrible one was last year. Apocalypse, that was its name. And that instead of moving on from Bryan Singer, we're just going to be moving over to his main producer, Simon Kinberg. So we'll see whether that happens. But it is looking like X-Men Supernova is the next X-Men movie. And if that is the case, hopefully that means space, as in the original Dark Phoenix saga story, which would be a nice change for the X-Men franchise. Simon Kinberg, though, has also been talking about Channing Tatum and has reaffirmed that Channing Tatum is committed to Gambit and likened his commitment to Hugh Jackman and Wolverine and Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool. So they still think it's happening. Apparently, they're working on a script and they're looking to shoot in early 2018, but it definitely won't get underway any sooner than that. So if we will see a Gambit movie, which Seven James is still convinced we never will, we'll probably see that in 2019 at the earliest. More X-Men rumours. Apparently, Joe Carnahan is rumoured to be working on the X-Force movie alongside Ryan Reynolds. Now, Deadpool 2 is gearing up to be filmed soon, so presumably the next Deadpool outing after that would be X-Force, and I think Ryan Reynolds will probably be one of the creative forces there. If he is working on an X-Force movie, Joe Carnahan seems like, to me, kind of a perfect fit for that kind of stuff. We do know that Joe Carnahan is currently working on a remake of The Raid, but this might be potentially his next project afterwards because there is talk that he could be writing and directing the X-Force film. And personally, I would be up for that because, like I say, I think he seems like a good fit. Speaking of Deadpool 2, Drew Goddard is rumoured to be working on the script for that. Ryan Reynolds tweeted that it's Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, I think, are still working, are still on that. They're not off Deadpool 2. So if Drew Goddard is working on it, it's likely that he's just punching it up or doing an extra draft or working alongside Reese and Wernick. But that'd be interesting because Drew Goddard is a name that we see circling around superhero properties an awful, awful lot. We will be talking about Logan on our next podcast, and Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart have both confirmed that Logan is their last X-Men movie. We always knew that about Hugh Jackman. He's kind of restated that right now he feels like it is the end. Maybe he'll change his mind in 3 or 4 years, but right now he thinks this is him and Logan done. And Patrick Stewart confirmed yesterday that this was his last one as well. Since we last recorded, we've seen some production art for the New Mutants movie, which pretty much confirmed that Maisie Williams is going to be playing Wolfsbane in that film. And finally on X-Men, we've got some more details on that X-Men TV pilot that Bryan Singer is directing, and Jamie Chung has been cast as Blink in the pilot. Also cast has been Blair Redford, who starred in Switched at Birth, and he's apparently going to be playing a kind of underground leader of mutants. This is interesting, though. Blink is a character not like a main character from the X-Men film franchises, but she was in X-Men Days of Future Past, I believe. And Jamie Chung is, I think, like a pretty decent, sizable casting for this. I like Jamie Chung, and I think she will. I think she's potentially enough of a draw for this. Like, it makes, to me at least, it makes this seem like a bigger deal than I thought before. And the fact that she's playing a mutant I've heard of rather than some kind of nondescript one is interesting, and that will probably pique James's interest unless they legion her and make her nothing like the Blink in the comics. But we'll see. This sounds interesting to me anyway. I'm more sold on this than Seven James are. And I think it's interesting that the plot synopsis said that this was about the parents when they've cast Jamie Chung in the lead. So I think it's probably going to be more of an ensemble cast kind of thing, if I had to guess. Okay, we'll move away from the X-Men stuff now and onto DC stuff. Matt Reeves, after being rumoured for Batman and then rumoured of walking away from Batman, has been confirmed as the director of the Batman. Ben Affleck tweeted about it, so it looks like he is still on board. So we've got a Matt Reeves directed movie with Ben Affleck as Batman coming. Joe Manganiello's on board as Deathstroke. I mean, we spoke about this before. I think Matt Reeves is a good director. I'm glad that he's doing this, but it doesn't seem quite as big a deal as some of the previous directors of Batman franchises have been, and I don't think I'm as excited for this film now as I was when Ben Affleck was directing. But having said that, I'm sure that Matt Reeves can surprise me and do something amazing, because I've never not enjoyed a Matt Reeves film. So fingers crossed he keeps that streak going with the Batman. Alongside that news, though, was the news that a Nightwing movie is probably on its way. It's being developed, and that the Lego Batman director Chris McKay is attached to that film, and that the accountant screenwriter, I think this is Bill Dubuque, possibly, he's working on the script. Now, I know the accountant didn't have a great reputation, and I didn't particularly like Lego Batman, and I'm sceptical about doing a Nightwing spin-off within the DCEU without any kind of hints at that Robin in the DCEU so far. So this seems like a strange one to me. Having said that, maybe if you just like completely divorce it and have a Nightwing character without having to do all of the Robin backstory, you just kind of assume it's happened and move on from there, that could work. Again, though, it just seems like another thing that DC is throwing out there and saying, will this fit in? And it smacks of no kind of big plans. I do wonder whether we're maybe seeing DC develop a whole bunch of different movies right now, and then depending on how Justice League goes down, they can then decide which ones to move forward on and which ones not to. Something it sounds like they are moving forward on, though, is Suicide Squad 2, because Mel Gibson has been in talks to direct that film. obviously Mel Gibson is someone who it's pretty hard to warm to. I think that's fair to say, given his actions in the past decade or so. But he's coming off Hacksaw Ridge, which has kind of seen Hollywood embrace him again, and this seems like a strange fit, Mel Gibson, for Suicide Squad 2, though. Mel Gibson doesn't seem like a director who would be interested in superhero stuff. But apparently, according to some of the reports out there, he's more interested by the cast that Suicide Squad 2 has rather than the concept. And the talk is that if he wants to direct it, the offer is there from Warner Brothers and DC. It's his to turn down. So maybe we'll see a Mel Gibson directed Suicide Squad 2. You know, on a artistic level, I could see Mel Gibson doing a good job with this. But something about Mel Gibson and Suicide Squad, and it just makes me feel a little bit queasy. And then Shazam, there is some news on the Shazam movie. Apparently Lights Out director David F. Sandberg is in talks to direct that. Again, I'm probably more confident that a Gambit movie gets made than any of these DC movies at this point. Put my money on Gambit before Nightwing or Shazam. But Warner Brothers at least seem to be developing all of those. Just a quick one aside from all of the main studios now. Hellboy 3 has been ruled out by Guillermo del Toro. After he teased the idea, he then tweeted out that, without any explanation really, that it's not going to happen. So, sorry Hellboy fans, doesn't look like that trilogy is going to get ended anytime soon. We'll move over to Marvel now, though, and Samuel L. Jackson says that Nick Fury might be turning up in Captain Marvel. That's after he confirmed that he won't be turning up in Black Panther. He was quite funny about Marvel's one black character not showing up in Marvel's black movie. He also confirmed on a tangent that he will be involved with Unbreakable 2, so that's exciting. And we got a new Thor and Daryl short, so if you missed that being released online in the last couple of weeks, Google that. It's funny again. Taika Waititi is doing some solid work drumming up my interest, at least for Thor Ragnarok, and the more Thor and Daryl sketches we can get, the better. And then we got some more details on Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 has had little bits of kind of merchandising pushed out there in the last few weeks. So there's lots of toys and lots of kind of little synopses and things floating around. No huge details, but I thought I certainly don't think we've read this out on the podcast before. So we've got the full synopsis for Guardians of the Galaxy 2 now, which is set to the backdrop of Awesome Mixtape 2. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 continues the team's adventures as they traverse the outer reaches of the cosmos. The Guardians must fight to keep their newfound family together as they unravel the mysteries of Peter Quill's true parentage. Old foes become new allies, and fan-favourite characters from the classic comics will come to our heroes' aid as the Marvel Cinematic Universe continues to expand. Now, obviously, that last sentence is probably the most interesting thing there. James Gunn has said that the meeting Ego and discovering Peter Quill's parentage happens pretty early in the movie, and it's not in there as a mystery, which is why they were so happy to announce it back at Comic-Con. Now, the fan-favourite characters from classic comics coming to our hero's aid, that's very interesting, isn't it? That could be original Guardians, that could be Adam Warlock, and we do know that Sylvester Stallone is in this movie in some capacity, so I'd be very interested to see potentially who he turns up as. But I do wonder whether maybe I'm going to have to get Seven James to explain the original Guardians of the Galaxy lineup to me as part of a future podcast, because it might become relevant. Apart from that, we've got a little bit of TV news. Cress Williams, who was one of the stars of Heart of Dixie, has been cast in the Black Lightning pilot. And Inhumans has cast Ewan Rian as Maximus, who I believe is kind of the villain of the piece. And he was described in one of the trade reports that I saw as the lead, which could hint potentially at the tone there, if we've maybe got an anti-hero as the lead of our show rather than Black Bolt and Medusa and the rest of the kind of the good side of the royal family. Also interesting that they've cast someone so well known at this point for Game of Thrones in a project that does sound to me like it could be Marvel's Game of Thrones. So that's Ewan Rian as Maximus in Inhumans, which is filming in Hawaii very shortly, I believe. That's it for this week's comic book movie and TV news, though, and we'll move on now to the discussion of the comics that Seb and James recommended on the last couple of podcasts. And I think if probably go in reverse order here. So we'll start off with the stuff that was recommended by Seb and James on the Lego Batman episode. So we'll start off with Seb's recommendation, which was formerly known as the Justice League from Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis, which I didn't realise until I was reading this. Now, obviously, Seb in the past has recommended to me Justice League International, which I think this is kind of like a spiritual sequel to, but I didn't realise how much later it had turned up. This is actually an early 2000s comic. And a great recommendation for the Lego Batman episode, because this is indeed very funny. We've got a team made up of Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, Captain Atom, Mary Marvel, the Elongated Man, the Elongated Man's wife, Sue, Fire, and all put together by Maxwell Lord. And basically, the concept of this comic is that Maxwell Lord, who is apparently at this point in DC continuity part android, decides that he wants to put together a new superhero team, kind of put together the old gang. And so the Justice League are still out there, so you've got Batman and the Flash and Martian Manhunter and Wonder Woman, all part of that gang. But you've got some of these kind of lesser heroes, the cast-offs kind of still out there, not really part of a team, not really doing much. Blue Beetle is kind of semi-retired because he has a heart condition. Booster Gold has married some hideous old woman so that he can use her money and be a man of leisure, basically. Elongated Man and Sue are private investigators, but kind of not really getting much excitement, and basically they're all not really doing an awful lot. The team also tries to recruit Captain Marvel, Shazam, but he wants no part of it, but Mary Marvel thinks that it sounds fun, so she goes along for the ride. And basically this comic is a lot of the humour is derived just from characters bickering with each other. There's also a robot called Elrond, who bickers a lot with Maxwell Lord. Booster and Blue Beetle bicker with each other. Booster does a lot of flirting with Mary Marvel. It's just a lot of good, solid character humour, which is drawn from them bantering. There's also a lot of humour by doing some kind of a lot of kind of metatextual comics commentary as well. And it's very self-referential, always kind of making fun of itself. But it's interesting, this is a 6-issue arc. It's just the 6 issues of this comic. From Googling, I saw that there was another series that followed up on this. But this is self-contained within the 6 issues. And so we kind of get the first couple of issues of the team getting put together, and then they get kidnapped by Roulette, who is a character that I've seen recently on Supergirl, and Roulette wants to put them in an arena to make them fight against each other, and she does achieve that to begin with Mary Marvel and Captain Atom, and kind of mind controls them into fighting to the death. And because Mary Marvel is really powerful, she basically, like, pulverizes Captain Atom and, like, just about kills him. She doesn't quite kill him, but she just about does, and suddenly the comic gets really serious and dark. And the issue ends with Roulette talking to the camera, essentially. And here's what she says. The people in the crowd who came here tonight expecting comic relief are eating their words right now. And when you can confound audiences' expectations, well, that's entertainment, isn't it? Entertainment and profit. And that's the kind of stuff that's going on here. It's like, it's suddenly you're going, Jesus, what's happening here? This funny little book has suddenly turned into this brutal thing where one of the most kind-hearted, wholesome character is beating the crap out of another one and looks like she's about to decapitate him. And then you still manage to get a laugh out of it when Roulette points out what's going on. I was really sold on this comic. That you get that kind of dark turn in the middle, and then the final two issues kind of return you back to the more lighthearted stuff, and again, it continues to be self-referential. And these characters are just fun to be around. I found Elongated Man a little bit dull. Fire a little bit dull as well. Captain Atom doesn't get to be around for that long because of that fight. But, I mean, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold are fantastic. Mary Marvel is an absolute delight. And I think this is probably maybe the best way to deal with the Shazam kind of characters, which is to kind of subvert their golly gosh gee whiz wholesomeness, and maybe poke a little bit of fun at them. But also, I really warmed to Mary Marvel. I thought she was a really sweet character, and there's some really funny stuff done in the last couple of issues as well, as she kind of is struggling with what she did while she was being mind controlled. I was a really big fan of this. I think it did some smart stuff, it did some really funny stuff, and it made me want to go back and read the rest of the JLI stuff from after the portion that Seb recommended back on that previous podcast. And not least because the Justice League do turn up at the end of this comic, and there is some really, really funny stuff with Batman and Martian Manhunter in particular. So I would heartily recommend Formerly Known as the Justice League. It reminded me of some of the funnier stuff that Marvel has been doing in the last couple of years, stuff like Howard the Duck and Squirrel Girl, basically. Except probably more successful than the majority of the Howard the Duck stuff that I read anyway. That was Formerly Known as the Justice League. But we'll move on now to Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, which was James's recommendation. I only read the first three issues of this, which made up the first volume. It's kind of like the first little mini story arc. Written by James Roberts and Nick Roach. And seems to be coming off the back of, in Transformers continuity, the end of the war between the Decepticons and...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And the Autobots. Yeah. So I have no interest in Transformers as a concept. I've said this many times. And I kept being told that Transformers More Than Meets the Eye was something that I would be able to enjoy, irregardless of that lack of interest in Transformers. And I've got to be honest, reading the first issue of this, I was like, really? Is that really the case? Because I spent the whole first issue going, who's this character? Who am I reading now? And what are they referring to there? They're referring to something in Transformers history. And then I was getting bogged down in the metaphor of things with the Autobots and the Decepticons. I was going, well, are robots born as Autobots or Decepticons? Or do they kind of choose to be an Autobot or a Decepticon? And in which case, does it kind of work like, does it kind of work like nationality or race, or does it work as just kind of like, I don't know, like football teams, more kind of tribal affiliation? Why were they fighting? What's going? They're on this off world. They're on Cybertron. Do they come to Earth in this? Like, if they transform, why do they transform? What's the purpose of that? Like, why do robots? They're all robots anyway. Why? What's the basis of them transforming into something like a car or a plane or a memory stick? Like, I can understand if they're like in disguise on Earth, but what is the need for all of this when they're on Cybertron? So all of that was stuff that I was confused about in the first issue, and getting bogged down in that stuff and not really able to enjoy it. But the first issue, I would say, is largely set up and transition from obviously what they were doing before to what they're doing afterwards. Because basically, by the end of this first issue, a bunch of the characters here get onto a ship, and they decide, well, there's one robot in particular, which for the life of me now, even after reading, I can't remember most of the names of these characters. There is, helpfully, on the back page of the second issue, a character page, which I'm now going to bring up so I can remember who they are. Rodimus! There we go. Rodimus is the leader of this gang, and he's taking this arc out into space, basically, to search for the Knights of Cybertron, I think, who are this kind of mythical group of Transformers from 10 million years ago. I don't think really any of that stuff ultimately matters. I think kind of all you need to know is that these Transformers are kind of idiots, especially Rodimus, that he doesn't really know what he's doing. They've all left Cybertron. They're looking for something that may or may not ever be there. And because they're a bit hapless, things are going to go wrong. Things immediately do go wrong. And it's a bunch of firefighting from that point out. And basically what you've got is you've got a group of kind of diverse and different robots stuck on this ship together. And some used to be Autobots, some used to be Decepticons. Some seem like good guys, some seem like bad guys. Most of them seem not very competent or intelligent. And they're going to get into japes and hijinks around the universe. And so, like, in the second issue, they discover that there is something on the ship that is ripping out people's sparks, eating sparks. So it's kind of like they've got a monster on the ship. And it feels like a kind of Red Dwarf, Battlestar Galactica, Star Trek kind of setup. That, you know, kind of any of those, anything, Serenity, Farscape, any of those kind of space set things where a group of characters are together and sci-fi adventures are happening around them. That's what this is. I found it very difficult reading the comic to identify which characters were which, I think because I've got Transformer face blindness. So I kept having to kind of refer back to this page and trying to, like, but even I'd be looking at pictures and, like, for example, if you put on this page, I'm looking, there is Rodimus, Ratchet, Rung, Chrome Dome, Rewind and Swerve, who also all have various red bits on their face, and because they all have red bits, I'm probably not sure which one is which at any point. I'm sure I'd get more used to that if I continued reading this comic. And to be fair, there is enough in there that I would be tempted to carry on. It is funny when the characters get going. Swerve and Skids particularly are two characters who seem pretty fun. I can see why people are saying you don't need to be a Transformers fan to like this. Having said that, I still do feel like Transformers, it being a Transformers comic, is a hurdle. I'd almost rather it was just this group of 12 or 13 different human characters on a spaceship, or even if they are robots, if they were robots that weren't Transformers and there wasn't any of that baggage to go around it. I still do find that a little bit of a barrier to me enjoying this comic. But that's on me. There's still a lot of really good, really funny stuff in here. And I only got three issues in, so I didn't really get to any of the stuff that James or Al previously on the podcast had talked about the kind of the interesting romances that's in this comic, and the heartwarming moments, and kind of some of the depth that I'd heard there was here. I just kind of got a funny, irreverent kind of space maroon setup here. But that was good enough to get me through the three issues, and I did kind of find myself enjoying it more as I got along. It was just basically the fact that it was Transformers was an issue for me, and I wish it wasn't, but it kind of is. I would like to go back and read more of this, and I'm sure I will. But yeah, I can't get really enthusiastic about it, because it is Transformers, and I don't think that yet I've got to the stuff that everyone really, really raves about. So that was Transformers More Than Meets the Eye, and we'll move on to our recommendations now from our Batman Mask of the Phantasm episode, and we'll start off with Batman Year 2, which I believe was Seb's recommendation, if I remember correctly. And this is... this is very, very similar to Batman Mask of the Phantasm, except I would argue not as good. So this is written by Mike W. Barr and penciled by... Well, we've got Paul Neary, Alfredo Alcala, Marta Farmer and Todd McFarlane. And I'm not sure who... There was introductions on the front page that suggested they all did pretty... extensive work on this, so I'll just name all of them. It does look great, this comic. I liked the design of it. But yeah, I thought it was remarkably similar to Batman Mask of the Phantasm, but maybe with that it was used as inspiration for the animated film, but they changed it enough to make it better. So yeah, we do have a villain who is kind of like the Phantasm here, except he's called the Reaper, and he keeps going around saying, "Fear the Reaper." So I listened to most of this comic with Blue Oyster Cult running through my head. And the Reaper is kind of, he's a vigilante who's come to Gotham, and apparently was in Gotham 20 years ago when before Batman turned up. Except he ruthlessly murders Crims with his big cleavers, and we know from very early in the comic that this guy is the father of this girl who's turned up in the city, Rachel Caspian, who is a charity worker and a trainee nun, except she falls for Bruce Wayne and decides to turn her back on being a nun during the course of this comic. But little does she know that she's actually dating Batman and her father is the Reaper. And so that's kind of the main thrust of things. And that's where all the similarities to Mask of the Phantasm are. I think that the way that Mask of the Phantasm does things with the kind of the love interest being the villain is more interesting than what's going on here. And it kind of wraps up the whole stuff around the identity of the Reaper and how the various characters feel about it in the third act, because this is split up into three issues. It's not very satisfying. I think Mask of the Phantasm does a much better job. The stuff that this has that's more unique to it, though, is Batman deciding to pick up a gun because he doesn't feel like he can defeat the Reaper without it. He feels like he's limited and that maybe he does have to compromise in terms of this weapon that he said he never would. And he also decides to team up with the criminal element of Gotham to take down the Reaper, which leads him to working directly with Joe Chill, the man who murdered his parents. And again, I kind of thought that was a little bit on the nose, the fact that he was actually teaming up with Joe Chill. And it is unsettling seeing Batman carry a gun. I hadn't realised quite how much, so I knew that, for instance, Superman doesn't kill, and I knew that Batman doesn't really kill either. But I don't think I'd fully grasped up to this point quite how much of an issue it was just Batman using a gun at all. And it is jarring seeing him pick up one, and I can understand why a lot of people really didn't like that element of Batman v Superman. There was a lot of things I didn't like about Batman v Superman. That was never really a big deal for me, but I can imagine if you'd grown up reading stories about Batman not using a gun like Batman Year 2 does, and kind of when it's an unsettling thing to see him use it, and he doesn't really need it either. So I can understand why that is now something that people don't like when they see Batman do it. And also something that in this comic is interestingly explored. I think the gun stuff is more interesting than making him team up directly with Joe Chill. But it allows for the story to do things with Batman getting over his lust for revenge and making it more of a kind of a mission to protect the city than anything of personal vengeance. It's nowhere near on the level of Batman Year One either. This is and this story is more focused on Batman. There's very little Jim Gordon. It's a spiritual sequel to Batman Year One rather than a direct one. I think it kind of plays with some of the ideas of a relatively new Batman in Gotham. But yeah, we're nowhere near the kind of the depth that Year One has. Having said that, I did enjoy this comic. I would just say that if you had the choice between either reading Batman Year 2 or watching Batman Mask of the Phantasm, I would go for Mask of the Phantasm every time. I think it's a more accomplished and more interesting version of this story, personally. And I love so much about the animated series and what the Mask of the Phantasm does, certainly more than Seven James did, I think. So maybe if you're getting recommendations from Seb or James, they would say Batman Year 2, but I would go Batman Mask of the Phantasm. But our final comic book recommendation now is Batman R.I.P., which is from Grant Morrison, Tony Daniel, and Sandu Floria. Now, this is a 6-issue arc. It looks like it happened maybe about a year into Grant Morrison's work on Batman. And from what I can tell, there has been some stuff set up in advance of this arc with the Black Glove organization, and Batman kind of slowly finding out little details about this Black Glove organization, who seem like kind of League of Shadows-y, but not the League of Shadows. They were their own thing. But basically, the Black Glove have decided to take Batman down, and they've got a big plan put in place for how they're going to do it, and that's going to unfold over the course of these issues. And they're basically trying to mentally destroy him as much as anything else, because they want to say and show that they don't like the fact that there's this vigilante in Gotham doing this kind of stuff, and they want to reassert the kind of order that they have had over the world for potentially a long time. So that involves kind of enlisting the Joker to help them in their plans at one point. It involves trying to take out a bunch of Batman's allies like Nightwing and Robin and Alfred. They basically have planted some kind of trigger word, which is Zur-En-Arr, which will kind of, when Batman finally, someone says those words to him, they will kind of send him loopy and destroy his mind. Basically what happens is Batman is then has created some kind of almost like backup personality. So Bruce Wayne has been removed, and all that remains is Batman. So he's kind of psychotic, and he becomes the Batman of Zur-En-Arr and starts going around Gotham with less morals than he used to have. So he can kind of fight his way back to taking down the Black Glove, which will all ultimately unfold in Arkham Asylum and bring the Joker into things. This is a Grant Morrison comic, so there's so much stuff going on. I don't think I could explain all the various aspects of it. when Batman's going nuts, he imagines Batmite talking to him quite a lot. And Batmite is kind of being a mischievous... Batmite is kind of his spirit guide, almost, in this comic, and kind of gets explained that he is part of Batman's imagination and always has been, and that, but that doesn't mean that he's not from the fifth dimension, because the fifth dimension is... that is memory. Or that is the imagination plane or something like that. And so I think this was Grant Morrison doing his whole explaining every aspect of the Batman lore as if it happened. So that is Batmite fitting into things as if he did happen and he was always there. There's a lot in here. I kind of didn't feel fully equipped to understand it all, having not read all of Grant Morrison's previous work on Batman, and also not knowing the character with quite as much depth as someone who's been reading him my entire life. But I do feel like I'm getting more and more of Batman, and there was certainly a lot of stuff in this comic that I liked. In fact, I found the story really satisfying. In fact, I wished I had more knowledge and more context. So when I'm reading the Transformers stuff, for example, I'm kind of going, I don't understand this, but I have no desire to go and find out more about Transformers lore. I'll just kind of go with it. Whereas here, I kind of wanted to go back and read the rest of the Grant Morrison stuff, and I wanted to go back and read some of the Batmite stuff. From way back when, I wanted to know a little bit more about various different characters here. And having said that, it still worked as a 6-issue arc for me. And I guess the thesis of this story is basically, it's that thing that Batman's always prepared, or Batman will always win. Like that Seven James was talking about, if all the superheroes fought each other, it doesn't matter that Batman doesn't have superpowers, because he will find a way to win. He'll find a way to prevail because he's Batman. And that's definitely what you get from this story. Like, every eventuality has been considered, and the Joker knows that as well. He kind of, in the final showdown, after he plays his part, kind of laughs at the Black Glove organization and says, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter that you think you've won. It doesn't matter that at that point you've buried Batman alive, because he's going to emerge from that grave in a minute and come back and defeat you. You just don't know it yet. And that is what happens. It's a great story. It does end with Batman seemingly dying, but I get the impression that it's a temporary thing, not a fixed thing by any means. I don't think Batman stayed dead after this. And we've just read a story about how Batman will never really lose. He is prepared for everything. So I don't think you can read the end of the story and go, oh yeah, he's probably dead there. That was Batman RIP. And I would say probably, I think formerly known as Justice League was my favourite comic from this week. Batman RIP was a close second. And I would say I'm most intrigued to read more of Transformers, more than meets the eye, to kind of get to some more of the stuff that James and Al had told me about that comic. And Batman Year 2 was fine, but felt like I'd kind of mostly got that stuff already from Batman Mask of the Phantasm. But that's it for this week's Megasode. Don't forget that our next episode will be on Logan. I think we're going to have a special guest for that episode, which should be pretty exciting. I can't wait for Logan. I'm hearing good things about it. I haven't seen it yet. James has. The more I hear, the more my hopes are getting high. And that has done in for me in the past. The high expectations has been a bad thing in the past, but hopefully it won't be this time. Hopefully Logan will hit the right spot for me. So we'll have our Logan episode with you next week, as soon as we can. The film is released in the UK on Tuesday, and I'm hoping to see it either then or Wednesday. So hopefully the podcast will be with you before the end of the week. If you're enjoying the show, then please do subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or your podcast app of choice, and you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. You can find more episodes of the podcast at cinematicmultiverse.com, and you can get in touch via Facebook, on Twitter at @CU_podcast, or send us an email to cinematicuniversepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.